And I've got Annika. Thank you so much for being back again. Welcome.
I'm starting to feel really at home here now.
Well, you won the award for the first person who's been on three times, so congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honour.
So we're going to be talking about customer surveys and how operators should be talking to their customers more, and I'm 100% behind this. I know that our customers don't do this enough. Just before we get into this, can you take sort of a minute or two to explain who you are and what you do, please?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Annika Wainwright, and I am the co-founder of Two Forks. We specialize in helping hospitality businesses really connect with their customers and take them on very deliberate journeys from sort of first-time visitor to return customer, and eventually sort of guide them into becoming those types of guests who are your fans and brand ambassadors who bring their friends and family in and come very often, which is what we all really want from our customers. And we do that by helping operators develop a tone of voice that really resonates with their customers, and brand messages that make sense both to their brand and to what the customers are looking for, and then applying that voice and messaging across various key touch points in the customer journey. And one of those key touch points is obviously a menu. It's the one thing that every single person interacts with in a restaurant. And I get really, really geeky about menus. I absolutely love them. Both Anna, my co-founder, and I used to be restaurant critics. So we've been ordering from menus and collecting menus since the early 90s. And I just absolutely love menus. So yeah, that's me.
Superb. So you, as I said, you've come on and you've done two fantastic episodes before, and I'll put the link, so message to the listeners, go ahead and listen to those. They were really interesting, and they've all kind of been around menu and increasing profitability through what you've got on your menu and everything. So it's a great little mini series that we've done with Annika here. So I guess this kind of wraps up what we've been talking about over the three episodes quite neatly, because nothing helps a business more, in my opinion, than customer feedback. But I know that hospitality businesses don't do it enough. So the first thing I'd like to ask you actually is, why, in your opinion, why don't they do it enough?
I don't know. I think it seems like a daunting process. You know, you think about running a survey and you think, oh God, you've got to write the questions and design the survey and you've got to send it out. Also, I think there's a little bit of ego in there, perhaps. And I think perhaps you don't want to be seen to not know. Like, I've had pushback on this before. Like, people are saying, oh, why should we ask our customers? Like, we're the experts. We're putting this experience together for them. Like, we shouldn't be seeming too uncertain of ourselves. But I'm a firm believer that the answer to every question in terms of restaurant marketing and customer experience lies with the customer. And if we talk to our customers more, we could make much better decisions in terms of strategy. So speaking to your customers, I think, is the most important thing that we can do. And that goes for everyone, not just restaurants, but, you know, people who supply restaurants. And I've been starting to practice what I preach and talking more to my customers about how I can support them. And it's such a game changer. And it's always surprising. Your customers will always, always tell you something that you hadn't thought of. And at the end of the day, they're the ones who are going to be coming back and booking tables and spending money in your restaurant. So why wouldn't you want to properly understand where they're coming from and what they want from the experience?
Yeah, I think maybe one of the reasons is historically restaurants have been pretty poor at actually staying connected with their customers, even knowing who their customers were. You know, the customer would be very transient through the industry. They would come, they would eat, they would dine, they would go. And if you were lucky, you'd see them and recognize them again in a couple of months or whatever. And that was the extent of the relationship.
Yep.
Whereas now, obviously, we've got great hospitality CRMs and things like that where you can actually capture customer data. And we've done some great episodes on that type of stuff. So I feel like that might be one of the main reasons, is like we're just in this phase of shifting to actually start to have customer relationships at the front of mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think one factor could be that in Britain, we don't like to bother people. You know, we don't want to email our customers too often. We don't want to We don't want to interrupt. We don't want to ask too much. We don't want to upset anyone. And so I think that's kind of the inspiration for today's topic, was to show that you don't have to send out a mega survey that will take your customers half an hour to fill out. You can ask three simple questions and get really good answers that help you make strategic decisions on your menu. So I'm a great believer in talking to your customers often and in short bursts, you know, asking just a few questions, really focusing on a specific thing and just doing it really often and getting into the habit. Because the more you do it and the more of these really valuable insights that you get, I think the more you're going to be inspired to want to do it again. And when you see what a game changer it can be, you'll probably start thinking about all sorts of other topics that you could be asking your customers about, and just getting into the habit of doing that frequently and in different ways. So you might run a survey, but also get in the habit of going to your restaurants, sitting in the dining room, engaging with people, observing customers, while they're having their experience, maybe popping around at the end of the meal and saying, can I buy you a coffee? Can I chat about your meal today? Most people are very happy to do that sort of thing. And particularly if you're able to identify your most loyal customers. So you talked earlier about sort of having more sophisticated CRM systems. If you're able to identify the people who are coming to your restaurants the most often, and you perhaps spend a little bit extra time surveying them because you want to figure out, A, who are these people so we can find more of them? And B, if these are the people who are going to be coming into your restaurant maybe once a week or once a month or once a quarter, whatever that sort of parameter is in terms of them being the most valuable customers to you, you want to be giving them the best possible experience every single time that they come in. And you want to find out whether there are perhaps are little things that niggle at them that they don't like. And it could be something really simple, like something that's available on your lunch menu but not on your breakfast menu that people really want. And so you can find great opportunities for A, making your customers happier, and B, perhaps even selling more to them when they come in.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sold. Hopefully the listener is sold as well. So you proposed asking three questions on the survey. When I first read that, I thought you meant ask the same three questions every time, but then I thought, obviously, you know, you must mean ask three different questions but only three. Is that what you mean?
Well, so in the context of this sort of little mini series of podcasts that we've now ended up doing, with this being the third one, just in the context of making more strategic decisions on your menu, there are three questions that I find really valuable. So those are just a set of three questions that I will always ask when I work on any menu project. So I would challenge anyone to ask those three questions and not find useful information to guide their menu work from those. So yeah, I do have three set questions that I would recommend for menu work specifically.
Come on, we're hanging here. Tell us what they are.
Right. So the first one, and this one I love, I use this one also when we do tone of voice development, and we want to figure out, you know, what do customers think about us? What? How do they describe us? How do they talk about our restaurant in their own language? So I do different variations on this question, but essentially what I want to say is, let's pick a restaurant name. So let's pick Wagamama. And I will ask, the question to the customer would be, you really fancy a Wagamama today, and you know that you have to convince your friend to come with you. So it might be that your friend has never been to Wagamama before, and you need to tell them what it's all about so that you can get them to come with you. How do you describe Wagamama to your friend who's never been before? That's the sort of question. And you get such amazing replies to those questions. Some of them will be really short. I'm a big believer in an open text box in surveys. Like, of course, if you have a big database and you get loads and loads of replies, going through those big open text boxes one at a time will take a lot of time. Luckily, these days you can use AI to summarize and find themes within those responses. But I've spent hours and hours trawling through survey responses by hand and reading those. But it's so worth it. Even if you don't have time to read all of them, even reading 100, it gives you such a great flavor of what your customers think that you're really about and what they really like about your restaurant. So even though that's a very general question about the restaurant experience and how you would sell that to a friend, it kind of gives you a steer of what they think you're all about. And it might be that what you think you're all about and the sort of menu that you've put together, there could be a disconnect with what your customers want. So they might describe you as a burger joint, but perhaps you only have a couple of burgers on your menu and you actually want to be famous for something else. Or sometimes there's a big disconnect in what customers say and what you're doing. So that's a really good scene setter, just to sort of form a baseline. What is it that customers like about us, and how do they talk about it when they're trying to sell it into a friend? So it's just a very good starter question for 10.
And I guess that tells you what is most valuable as well. So we do this as well, actually. So we've actually dropped quite a few features from our platform over the last year because we thought they were great features. But when we asked customers what they really liked, it never came up. Mm-hmm. And when we delved deeper into that, it was just something that the perceived value was pretty, of those particular features was pretty low. So you know, we dropped them. We don't talk about some of them anymore, some of the others. And that can be the same for, you know, restaurants corner. It can be, that could probably tell you which particular things about the restaurant they like, which things they're not so bothered about, but maybe you think that they are bothered about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And then question two, which is more menu based, would be something along the lines of, what are your favorite things on our menu and why do you like them? Again, an open text box, much better than multiple choice, because multiple choice doesn't really tell us, it doesn't give us that why. Sometimes if you have a really big menu, you might want to actually include in the survey a picture of the menu so people can see it and be reminded of what's on there. But you want to get people in their own words again to name the things that they really like and tell you why they like them. And obviously, you can get similar information from your sales data. You will know which ones are your best sellers. So those are typically going to be the dishes that your customers like the best. But you never, the sales data never gives you that why. And the why is really important, because the reason why one of your dishes is a complete bestseller could be entirely different to what you thought it was. There might be something very surprising that your customers are telling you that they like about this dish. And perhaps when you're looking at other dishes on your menu that aren't performing as well as that one, there might be something from that insight that you have about the dish that people do love that you can apply to another dish to make that more popular. So if you listen to the last episode about the highlighters and the menu matrix and identifying the dishes that might need a little bit of help to perform better, this is the question that could help give you some insights as to what people are looking for. So there might be a dish that people tell you that they love because it's really fresh and vibrant and healthy feeling. And there might be dishes on your menu that just don't sound as fresh and green and vibrant. So that there might be things that you can work into a description to sell a dish that isn't performing as well.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, customers more price sensitive than you think or something like that.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, and the last one?
And the last one is essentially, is there anything missing on the menu? What would you add to the menu if you could? And this one is a game changer, because quite often we miss out on opportunities to give our customers what they want simply because we don't know what they want. For example, we worked on the caravan menus recently, and the number one answer to that question was, we want fries at breakfast. So a caravan have these rosemary scented salt fries that people go absolutely nuts for. They're amazing. And they're only available from, I think it's from noon onwards. And their regulars were saying, I want those chips for breakfast as well, or at brunch, or, you know, they're an all day operation. And just by identifying that there's something that we have that we pump out all day and that is really popular and customers love, if we just started serving it a little bit earlier in the day, there's a huge opportunity to make more money there. And that's something that is obvious perhaps, but had we not asked that question, the customers wouldn't have told us that. So sometimes there's some really easy no-brainers. Other times it might be, like, for example, we worked with Pizza Pilgrims and we were trying to figure out why it was that people weren't taking up the offer of, there was like a set price with the dip. So we have these on the Pizza Pilgrims menu, there are these crust dippers. So they're all about the crust and the Neapolitan pizza and the great sort of tasting bread. And then they serve these crust dippers that you can dunk your crusts in to sort of keep enjoying the pizza and not leave the crust on the plate. And we had a great deal where it was sort of one for X price and three for another price, so that a sort of saving for buying all three. But they weren't selling as many of those combined packages as they wanted, and we figured out that it was because one of the dips was a truffle dip and there were so many customers who just don't like the flavor of truffle. So we were able to figure out if we added a few more choices, so there were five to choose from and you got three for a set price, loads more people would go for that upsell. So customers will tell you what they're craving, and sometimes we're not giving them that super easy thing that they would, it would just be a no-brainer, like, yes, I love a garlic and herb dip, I'm gonna order that today. So yeah, asking that question helps you identify those sort of missed opportunities. It might be when we worked with Rose's Thai, loads and loads of people were asking for Singer beer. So they've for a long time they've had Chang on their menus and it's a great beer and people like it, but for a lot of people, particularly people who've traveled in Thailand, they associate Thailand and Thai food with Singer beer. And by adding Singer beer because the customers asked for it, there was a huge lift in the sales of the beer. So sometimes it's just super really easy additions to a menu, or maybe a change from one supplier to the other. Maybe someone doesn't like a particular cheese that's on a dish or whatever. You can make small adjustments and make your regulars much more happy by asking that question.
I love those. So would you send these out at timed intervals, or would you do it after certain milestones, like a new menu being created or something like that?
Well, we would typically do it at the beginning of a menu project. So we talk about 360 menu optimization, because I believe that you need to work on a menu within the ecosystem that it sits. So we want to talk to the customers. We want to talk to the front of house teams. We want to talk to the back of house teams. We want to look at the sales data and get all of the information to make us to help us make really strategic decisions in improving the menu. And the very first step of that project is always customer research. So like, let's get that baseline data in. Let's figure out what people like, what they don't like, what they would add. Like, that's a really great place to start from, and it will help inform all of the other research that you do. So definitely at the start of a project. But as you say, you have these clever CRM systems now where you can actually build in a post-visit journey. And why wouldn't you want to send a question or two to people at a regular interval? So maybe, you know, on the day after a visit, you could send a really simple question. Perhaps if someone hasn't been for a long time, you can also set a trigger so that they get a reminder email, and perhaps even ask them straight out, why haven't you been, kind of thing. So yeah, absolutely. The more you can talk to your customers, the better. But definitely at the start of any kind of big project where you change the menu. I'm amazed how many operators do new iterations of menus and they never involve the customer in any of that. They sort of just go on gut feeling and what they think looks good. And by involving your customers, you can just make much more strategic decisions. So we would typically send a survey, get some quantitative data, get lots and lots of replies and explore different themes. And then we would typically follow up and do some interviews with customers where we do role play and interactive interviews where we sort of pretend to be ordering from a menu together so that we see how people play around and how people make decisions on that particular menu. It's always slightly different with every brand. And wow, you get really great insights from that as well. But even just a 3-question survey, super easy to put together. I use Google Forms. It's free. it's so intuitive. You just go in and it guides you through the process of how you write that question. So I just put in a little headline, thanks for helping us improve the name of your restaurant. And then you have a little introduction and you just say, we'd love to hear your feedback. It means the world to us. Please take a minute to answer these three simple questions. And then usually I would put at the end of the survey, one final sort of follow-up question. Would you be open to us sending you further surveys, or would you even be up for an interview if one of our researchers was to contact you? And you'd be amazed how many people say yes to that as well. And then you have that invitation to send follow-up surveys or even booking in an interview. And then the only other thing to really flag on the survey form is if you're collecting people's email addresses to send those follow-up surveys or figure out who told you what, just explaining that we only ask for your email address so that we can contact you if we have any questions. Yeah. And making sure that we're not getting duplicates, but we won't share it with anyone else. So people want that reassurance that you're not going to send their email address to anyone. So it's that simple. You do the Google form, you get the shared link, and you can just send it out to your email database. Maybe you send it to just that key segment of your best customers. Maybe you send it to everyone. Perhaps you, if you have a small email list, perhaps you put it out on social media. You might want to run a competition around it. But I often get asked by customers, do we need to offer some kind of incentive to get people to fill out the survey? And I always guide operators to start without an incentive and see what comes back. And most of the time, you're pleasantly surprised how many people are just keen to give you their opinion. And then it's really nice to maybe surprise with an incentive afterwards. So you're getting people to fill out the survey and you're protecting yourself from talking to those people. Like, there are kind of professional freebie hunters out there who are on lots of mailing lists only to get vouchers for various things. And those are not really your people that you want to be speaking to. So you want to be able to hear from the customers who care enough about your brand to actually take of their own time and answer a survey just out of the goodness of their hearts. Those are the people that you want to hear from. So if you can get enough replies and buy enough, you know, that's sort of how long is a piece of string. But I say if you can get 100 results, which is not that hard to get, that's very significant. And that will give you a good steer on what your customers are feeling. And then once you've done a survey, or you might want to think about different incentives for the people who've even taken the time to spend time on the phone with a researcher and doing an interview. It's really nice to afterwards surprise those people and say, thanks so much. Your insights were so valuable. Why don't you come in and have a drink on us next time you visit, or that kind of thing. So it's really nice to follow up with a surprise incentive, but not to make it a competition. Whereas, and that's kind of best practice on email. On social media, it tends to be a little bit harder, and you tend to have to sort of gamify it a little bit to get people to click through, particularly on Instagram, where there isn't such a thing as a direct link. So you have to like go to the bio and find the link, and it's a bit of a long way around. So that's a last minute resort, or last ditch resort if you don't have a big mailing list, is to maybe think about, could you do some kind of competition on Instagram that's perhaps not driving straight to the survey, but that's a competition that's all about collecting email addresses so that you can build your email database and then email the survey. That's always the best way.
Superb. Brilliant. Going to leave it there because there's absolutely loads of people to get their head into there. So
yeah, sorry. I can talk about this all day. I'm so passionate about customer research.
It was excellent. It was brilliant. Yeah, there's loads. So obviously we've got the three questions there, but there's loads of tips you just shared in the last sort of 6 or 7 minutes. So I would go back and listen to that again, to be honest. That was brilliant. So Annika, your LinkedIn bio is going to be in the show notes. So listener, if you would like to reach out and ask any more questions of Annika, please do on LinkedIn. And thank you for your time on all three episodes that you've been on, Annika. They're really, really useful and really helpful. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. I can talk about this stuff all day. It's great. Thanks for having me.
You almost have.
Yes.